The patrol frigate Blood Price bore the colors of the Frakish Navy and the crest of Governor Fogabril. Both were displayed more prominently than the sigil of the Imperial Moth for Sector 5, which was consigned to the armor panel above the frigate's tin turrets. The displays mirrored the allegiances held by Captain Urs Doggett and his crew of nearly 400. The officers owed their commissions and their postings to Brill, not to Grand Moff Gan. It was Brill who collected the commission fees and the annual posting assessments. It was Brill who paid off favors to wealthy families with command ranks that drew pay in goods and gold instead of profit scrip. The Blood Price navigator reported,
"Course change maneuver complete, Captain."
Captain Doggett flipped a switch on his comm unit.
"Turmaster, report."
The listening array Blood Price towed behind it was 100 times longer than the ship itself. It was a spider web of passive antenna cables, tiny noiseless amplifiers, steering jets, and tension vanes, with a drag gondola the size of a troop transport at the end of the antenna's main cable. The three crew members in the gondola had the difficult job of flying the array through the turn when Blood Price changed heading. If there was too little tension, the elements could tangle, or the whole array could tear itself apart in what the tow crews called tail whip. If there was too much tension through the turn, the result was an overstrained disconnect and a 2-hour delay for the recapture procedure. So it was with great relief that Doggett heard,
"The array turned cleanly, and deployment is nominal."
The main purpose of the deep patrol was to detect possible military threats long before they could come near Prakis. But an equally important mission was to intercept and claim as a prize any vessel unwary enough to pass within reach. Ship seizures were not only an obligation, but an opportunity. A rich enough prize could advance the entire crew to a better post. So later that day, when Captain Doggett was called away from his quarters and saw the size of the contact on the optical displays, he quickly forgave the interruption.
"What identification have you made?"
His officer responded, "None so far. The image is too crude, and the target is silent in all spectral bands except the optical." Captain Doggett weighed the possibilities. A warship of that size would be more than a match for a patrol frigate. He would need reinforcements from the inner fleet. But this would be a prize of the first rank, and one he would prefer not to share with other captains. For a brief moment, he considered cutting the array adrift rather than allowing the hour necessary to reel it in. But if the contact proved spurious or the target escaped, the loss of the array would cost him his post, if not his life.
"Bring in the array. Prepare the ship for hyperspace. Notify patrol command that we are in pursuit of an unidentified contact."
"On the job again, I see. Do you know you snore like a power saw in ironwood?"
Lando's voice, sharp and clear in the helmet's comm speaker, startled a dozing Lobot awake. He looked up to find Lando and R2 back in Chamber 21, the portal quickly closing behind them. Lando was holding his helmet under his arm and grinning broadly.
"Master Lando, have you gone mad?" 3PO demanded. "You must replace your helmet immediately or you'll suffocate."
"I've had it off for most of an hour now. Didn't you wonder how anything could burn in an atmosphere that was 90% nitrogen and carbon dioxide?"
"It seems I did not have the necessary data to wonder," said Lola. "And I was thinking about other things."
"Well, the answer is, it can't," said Lando. "I had to find out if the other rooms had been oxygen-enriched, and I discovered that every chamber now has a breathable atmosphere."
Lobot took off his helmet. The air was dry and sweet in his lungs. He looked at Lando in puzzlement. "Why should this be?"
"You said it first. This ship isn't out to harm us. It was expecting visitors."
Lobot scratched his bald head. "But we took a wrong turn after we entered. We weren't supposed to be wandering through the weapon system, which has its own specific environmental needs. We were supposed to be going through the museum,
which was in cold storage until we arrived. It makes perfect sense. Oxygen is highly reactive. Keeping the oxygen pressure low and the carbon dioxide high protects the ship from fire, the exhibits from corrosion."
"Then what happened to all the carbon dioxide that was in the air? Scrubbing?"
"The original and best kind. The ship breathed it in, locked up the carbon, and gave back the oxygen." "Lobot, don't you see? This ship is alive." On Captain Doggett's orders, the Blood Price began charging its primary ion cannon battery immediately after exiting hyperspace. There would be no negotiations, no warning shots, no demands for surrender. Doggett did not intend to allow the captain of the intruding vessel any latitude at all. The navigation master called out, "Target closing velocity is 1,816 meters per second. Captain Doggett studied the image on his command display. It seemed almost too good to believe, a huge, unarmed and unprotected vessel barely crawling through space. "Are there any other Prakith vessels on the board?" "Showing the light cruiser Goroth and the destroyer Tobey approximately 20 million kilometers astern. They won't be here for a while."
"Very well. Then we must do what we can ourselves. Gunnery Master, you may fire when ready. Ion batteries only. I want that ship disabled, not destroyed. Troop Master, prepare your units for boarding."
Lando and Lobach had both shed their contact suits. The pieces of both suits floated around the chamber like dismembered corpses, while R2 and 3PO looked on nonplussed by the display.
"What? Another ship? Heading directly toward us? Oh, we are saved. I knew the Colonel would come for us."
Lando held out a hand.
"Slow down, 3PO. What's going on?"
"R2 says the sensors on the Limpet are detecting another ship on an intercept course."
Lando shot a worried look toward Lobach.
"What ship?"
"The holoprojector. R2 can relay the signal from the imager."
A few seconds later, half the chamber was filled with the Limpet's wide-angle view of space outside the Vagabond Hall. The approaching ship was clearly visible.
"Imperial escort frigate,"
Lando said immediately.
"Shouldn't we signal somehow, Master Lando?"
"The only signal I want to send that ship is a wave goodbye."
Lando reached out and touched the wall of the chamber.
"Come on, old lady, don't wait around for an introduction. Oh, black."
The bow of the onrushing frigate had suddenly disappeared behind the yellow-white plasma bubble of an ion cannon burst. A fraction of a second later, the hollow projection turned a crackling white, then disappeared. Lobot struggled to pull the lower half of his contact suit up over his legs.
"The Memphis's been fried. R2 isn't getting anything from it now."
Lando pressed his palm against the wall, hoping to feel the tremor of a hyperspace jump beginning.
"Of all the luck. What's going on? Why is she waiting so long to jump?"
As one, they fell silent, listening to the ship, hoping to hear her sinews groaning as the jump engines punched her into hyperspace, and fearing any other sounds that might mean their journey would be ending here, a long way from home. The captain of the cruiser Goroth was cursing the name of the captain of the frigate Blood Price even before his ship's forward scanners lit up with the glow of a battle begun. When he saw the frigate open fire on the strange vessel, his fury knew no bounds.
"I swear this man will dig his own grave, and I will see his children bury him alive there."
They were too far away, the image too jumpy and coarse to tell what effect Blood Price's barrage had had on its target. But they were close enough to witness what followed. Along with the crew of Tobey, they were the only witnesses. The great hull of the target brightened fore and aft, and something struck out across the entrance toward Blood Price. Seconds later, the frigate exploded with a ferocity that could only mean the ionization reactor had gone critical. It simply vanished from the sensor displays.
"Too quick for you,"
the captain of the Goroth said coldly. Meanwhile, the intruding vessel was turning away from the shattered hulk, away from Prakith and toward the rim.
The captain cried out,
"Notify Tobey to prepare for hyperspace. Propulsion master ready on my mark. We will erase this humiliation and capture the invader ourselves."
Colonel Pakpakot's new orders read simply, "Mission terminated, effective your receipt this notice. Break off all operations immediately." It was signed NRI Operations Center.
"This will not do!"
Pakpakot swept out of his quarters, the threat ruffles blossoming down his back, and the crimson expanse on his throat warned away any who might otherwise have tried to speak to him on his way to the bridge. He dropped into the chair in his combat lounge.
"Secure channel, isolation. NRI Operations Center, Coruscant. Highest priority."
When his contact came on the line, Pakpakot nodded acknowledgement.
"General Meekin, sir, I must contest the decision to terminate the mission. This is a betrayal of..."
"Colonel, this is not open for discussion. The decision has been made, and your exception is noted."
"Sir, I request permission to take an all-volunteer team and continue the search in General Calrissian's yacht Lady Luck. This would not...
Denied.
Then I request immediate leave in order to continue the search on my own.
Denied. All leaves have been canceled due to the crisis in Farlak Sector.
Then you leave me in an impossible position.
Why is that, Colonel?
That Picard bared his teeth.
General, a Hortek does not leave the bodies of comrades in the hands of the enemy, ever. I must ask you to count me among the missing from the Tel'Jacon expedition. Because even if I did return, I would still be here in ways which would compromise my ability to do any other job for you.
Reekon settled back in his chair.
This is that important to you. Very well, Colonel. Lady Luck, no more than 3 additional volunteers. And whatever unexpended mission supplies you choose and the yacht can carry. Report any substantive developments promptly. And, Colonel...
Sir.
My tolerance is fairly inelastic. Don't try to stretch it.
A little more than an hour later, Pak Picot and his crew watched from Lady Luck's tiny flight deck as the cruiser Glorious and the escort Kettenmoor turned together and jumped toward Coruscant.
It begins, Pak Picot said to the empty sky.
Part 2, Luke. The skiff Mudslop was outbound in real space from Lukazik at top speed, which, considering it was a Verpine adventurer, was not enough to satisfy Akana.
Luke, can't you make it go faster?
How? Get out and push?
Can't you use the Force to speed us up?
The Force isn't a magic wand. There are limits. He gestured at the navigational display. Besides, it looks like no one's taken enough interest in our departure to try to follow.
They don't need to yet. We're days from clearing the flight control zone, aren't we?
Luke glanced down at the controls. 3 days, more or less.
Then they can just watch us for now. Let us think we're getting away free and see where we're going.
There aren't many ships that couldn't catch us before we reach the jump radius. Luke frowned. The agents who ambushed us are dead. The flight controllers gave us clearance without a peep. What will it take for you to feel safe?
I won't feel safe until we found the Falanasi.
How close are we? What did the white current writing on the wall of the cottage back there say?
You mean the sigil? It's a symbol that's used in what we call scribing.
I see.
I already told you what it meant. It pointed the way home.
But you didn't tell me where that is. Don't you trust me, Akana?
I know you to be a good man. But some of what you do makes me uncomfortable. In the long run, I have never known a warrior or a soldier to be a friend.
Luke spoke softly. I'm not a soldier. And the lightsaber only comes to my hand to protect people I care about. Is that a warrior or a friend? Akana was silent, looking down at her lap.
Finally, she answered. We have to go to Tear. The Circle may not have been able to stay there, but that is where they went from Lukazik.
Didn't you say you've already been there looking for them?
No, I said I couldn't find them there. I made inquiries from Karatos. But the Falanasi change names, styles of dress, habits of speech, even the way we groom our hair, to blend in. Unless I can be face to face with them, let them feel me beside them in the current, they would not reveal themselves.
You think they're still hiding?
After what just happened? Can you not say we have reason?
Luke nodded. I think we need to talk about what happened.
So do I.
Akana's eyes flashed darkly.
Almost all of my memories from Meatra are good ones. I suppose that's one reason why what you did there upsets me so much.
I'm sorry, but I'm not going to feel guilty about saving you.
What about killing those 2 men? Do you feel anything about that?
One of them killed himself.
Commander Patton.
Luke nodded. I didn't want him dead. I was trying to question him.
And the other? The one you eviscerated with your lightsaber? Were you trying to kill him?
He had a personal shield. It takes a lot of force to get through one, and when your blade does pop through, it's hard to stop it before it does a lot of damage.
She shook her head slowly. Luke, there's something I must ask of you. That you never again kill to save me. I am glad that you care about me, but it makes my spirit heavy to have the screams and the blood of those men in my memory, in the ruins of a place that I loved. I don't know if I can make you that promise. I have my own conscience to satisfy. And sometimes it demands that I fight for my friends.
That you kill for your friends.
When it's necessary. In the end, 3 days of watching the NAS scanner yielded only a handful of wholly innocent contacts. No warships appeared, and the few private and commercial craft that left Lukaszek after them or passed the mudslot inbound took no apparent interest in the little skiff. Luke studied the controls. Whoever Commander Puffin was reporting to must have been far enough away that his controller simply wrote him off. Akana spoke from behind him.
They'll be looking for us everywhere now. For you in particular.
Looking and finding are two different things. I've had to make a habit of disguising myself in public just to be left alone.
How do you do that?
Oh, I make myself look older where youth is honored and younger where age is honored. Female where males are the ones who strut. Male where they aren't. It's the nearest thing to being invisible. Being unattractive.
Show me.
Akana saw his shoulders rise and fall, heard the deep breath that came out almost as a sigh. When he turned toward her, she saw a 60-year-old face that reminded her at once of everyone and no one. There was nothing at all to remember it by.
Very good. May I try something?
He gestured with open hands. Drawing a breath, Akana closed her eyes and moved the focus of her senses behind where Luke seemed to be, groping for an anchor in what was real. When she found it, she opened her eyes again and blew away the illusion.
There you are.
Very good. It takes a strong mind to penetrate the illusion.
I wanted to make certain I could find you if we had to separate on Tear. Do you change your voice, too?
I can. But speaking of Tear, we're in the yellow zone. Where Lukaszek had been rustic, Tear was bureaucratic. Located near the juncture of three busy spaceways and wearing a spectacular 4,000-kilometer-long canyon like a dueling scar, Tear was one of the New Republic's boom worlds. Most of the boom was in visitors and vacationers. Fearing unbridled growth, Tear's leaders purposefully discouraged would-be immigrants with a maze of regulations and a determinedly officious citizen services corps. The unofficial tourism motto was, "Come see spectacular Tear Rift, then go home." Akana and Luke caught two of the last three open seats on the arrival shuttle, a low-riding, slow-moving landspeeder. The third was taken by an Elumin, who had emerged from the airspeeder parked across the towpath from Mudsloth. As soon as the shuttle sped off in the direction of the terminal, an empty shuttle moved in to take its place. Luke, disguised as an older man named Lee Stom, remarked to Akana, who was disguised as his wife,
"Quite an operation, don't you think, dear?"
Akana seemed inhibited by the other travelers around them. The Elumin, immediately to her right, towered over her by more than a head. She answered only with a polite smile. After they had passed through the arrival screening line, consisting of a droid greeter, a screening for their bags, and a discreet security sweep of their persons, an examiner passed two traveler's aid cards through an encoder.
"Welcome to Tear. Enjoy your stay with us."
Between the spaceport terminal and the Skyrail station was the broad green expanse of Welcome Park. Luke and Akana stopped at the first open bench they spotted, tucking their bags protectively behind their feet. Luke took stock of their surroundings. "I think we are finally officially here. I need to know what region we're..." He stopped as he saw that she was fighting tears.
"What's wrong?"
"Everything's wrong.
This isn't our kind of world. It's too crowded, too loud, too organized and artificial. If they were ever here, they won't have stayed very long."
Bowing her head, she began to sob quietly.
"I'm sorry. I'm not doing a very good job of being invisible."
Luke glanced up briefly. "No one's watching. All these people can see right now are their own plans and worries and hopes. Now, where do we start? Who are we looking for?"
Akana tried to calm herself. "The city of Grian. That's where the children are taken."
Luke studied one of the traveler's aid cards. It had a tiny display screen that took up half of one side, with some universal symbol command keys below. On the back was a line drawing of the structure that stood at the center of the park, a ring of more than 100 small kiosks surrounding a 2-story-high carousel display. Luke reached down and shouldered both bags.
Okay, let's go see what the kiosks can tell us about Grian.
As they stood in line for an information kiosk, Akana's mood seemed to brighten as though she were absorbing some of the energy around her. But Luke felt someone's curiosity as if there had been a light touch on his face by a person trying to recognize him. Looking back across Welcome Park on a pretense of casual crowd-watching, he focused on the tall, slender form of an Elemen male, already turning his horned face away. Luke watched his quarry move through the crowd until he disappeared behind the information center, but the Elemen never glanced his way again. Luke reprimanded himself. You're getting twitchy. There's no way that an Elemen would be working for Imperial Intelligence. But the fact that an Elemen, perhaps this same one, had parked an airspeeder directly across from Mudsloth would not leave his awareness. Luke and Akana rode the rift skyrail as far as Cloud Bridge, where they retreated to a breathtaking view of the rift. There, as Lee Stung, Luke rented a bubbleback, a local landspeeder variant popular with visitors who wanted to explore the canyon bottom. But instead of heading for the elevators at the Cloud Bridge rift access point, Luke turned toward Grian. At the heart of the city was a small commercial zone. Around the border was an enclosing wall of silos, granaries, ag domes, sheds for auto harvesters and skyhoppers, control towers for the irrigation system, and all the other facilities necessary for servicing the agricultural fields beyond. Luke guided the bubbleback into a refueling stall.
Welcome to scenic Grian. What now? Do you have a plan?
I have an address. North 526 down. My friend Nurika lives there.
Luke shot her a questioning look.
I thought the children were supposed to be hiding. How did you get a lead as specific as an address?
From Nurika. I got one letter from her that first month, Hypercom to Karatos. I wrote her back a dozen letters at least, but I never heard from her again.
But when the bubbleback turned onto North 5, Akana's face went pale and she clutched Luke's wrist. The double row of low houses ended at number 22. Where number 24 should have been, was an expanse of patchy grass. Beyond it were several lots of bare, yellowish dirt. The next even-numbered low house was 38. Popping the bubble, Akana jumped out before the landspeeder came to a stop. She ran back down the street, hugging her arms to her chest, her gaze darting from one side of the roadway to the other. Before Luke could reach her, her legs buckled under her, and she dropped to her knees in the dust-dry rain gutter.
I'll never find them. What am I going to do, Luke?
Something the matter, folks?
A voice said from behind. They turned to see a stubble-faced middle-aged man in tech coveralls approaching from the direction of number 27. Luke offered Akana a hand to help her up. Luke said,
No, she's all right. She just had an ugly surprise. We're looking for someone who used to live in number 26.
The man nodded.
I'm Paul Regis. My wife, Jiki, and I live over in 27 up. So, you didn't know, did you?
Akana's voice was shaky.
Was it the war?
The war? No. Terre was never bombed. Cyclone. 9 years ago. 15 dead on this street alone.
Luke said,
The person we're looking for would have moved here 19 years ago. A girl, 11 years old. Akana?
She was dark-haired, willowy. Her name was Nurika, or Nori.
I don't know. Did you say the name was Rika?
Who was it that lived there then?
Trobesar, I think, was her name.
Akana nodded eagerly.
Yes, you remember her?
Sure, I remember little Rika. She was shy as a shadow. Wasn't there very long, one season at most. I'm sorry, I don't know where they went. That was all a long time ago, you know.
The recorder of assignments and transactions for the supervisors' committee turned out to be a brand new fat-body TT-40 library droid. Luke began,
We need some information about
In accord with Ordinance 2025, privacy of official records, all requests for current records must be approved by the supervisor of your district, or for non-residents, by the general supervisor.
To Luke's surprise, Akana was unfazed.
Clerk, I have a package to deliver to Paul Regis. Can you tell me his current address?
The droid's data probe spun.
Paul Regis resides at North 527 up.
Clerk, I have a package to deliver to Trove Sar. Can you tell me her current address?
Trove Sar is not in the current city directory.
Can you tell me Trove Sar's last known address on Terra?
In revision 89 of the Sedona City Directory, Trove Sar's last known address is Telka 13.
Thank you. Akana took Luke's arm. Let's go, Lee.
Outside the committee office, she whispered,
"This is it. Kelplap is a Falanasi name. It means held breath, an allusion to our meditation exercises."
The river city of Sedona was on the far side of Ter, straddling the Noga River at what was considered its upstream limit of navigability. Luke followed the harvest flyway to Touros Noth, paying a hefty premium for dropping the bubble back at the Sky Rail station there. As night closed in, he and Akana boarded a westbound rail train. Luke noticed that an Elliman passenger was sitting near the front of the car on the opposite side. The Elliman's back was turned toward Luke, his horned skull crown just visible over the top cushion of his tour couch. "Now, where did you come from?" Luke thought. "Everything I know about you says that this isn't really your sort of vacation spot. And I can count on the fingers of one hand the number of times I've seen a solitary Elliman out in mixed company. I wonder if you're the same one I saw before." Just then, the Elliman left his seat and moved forward with slow, long-limbed strides. At the end of the aisle, he paused for a moment and looked back into the cabin. Then, ducking his head, he passed through the connecting doorway and was gone. Akana slept through it all. When she woke, Luke said nothing to her about it. The name Kel Plath no longer appeared in the Sedona directories, but an hour at the city library uncovered not only its location, but also the petition under which its new owners had asked for the more marketable name of River Gardens. Kel Plath had been a communal, a walled and gated space enclosing a group of small residences surrounding a common green. Luke and Akana approached the security droid at the gate and asked after Trove Sar, Norika, and the other children. In each case, the answer was the same.
"I am unable to identify the resident requested."
Luke decided to try another tack.
"I'm interested in purchasing a share in River Gardens. Who could arrange a tour of the facilities for us?"
"No shares are currently available for purchase."
Luke and Akana retreated to the other side of the street to regroup. Luke volunteered to vault the wall, which was 3 meters high and slippery smooth, but Akana insisted on conducting the search in her own way. She moved down the wall, trailing her fingertips along the surface. Luke followed a few steps behind, trying to sense the interaction between her and the wall as she searched for the Falanasi scribing. When they rounded the third corner, Akana cried out in surprise. With two quick strides, Luke was beside her. The security droid blocked her way.
"This is your only warning. You are loitering on private property. Your likeness has been recorded. Your suspicious behavior has been documented. Remove yourself from this vicinity immediately. If you do not, you will be detained and a complaint will be made against you."
As soon as they reached their land speeder, Akana whispered,
"There was writing by the front gate. It marked this place as Kelplath."
"That's all?"
"That's all. What we need is inside. I have to go back."
"And do what?"
"What I did the night we met. Or have you forgotten?"
"I haven't forgotten that you never explained how you got into the sanctuary without me sensing you."
"To do so would violate my oath."
Akana started off. "Wait! What can I do?"
"I do not expect to need anyone killed. Do what you just said. Wait."
20 minutes later, Luke felt her approaching. She climbed in before speaking.
"Let's go. We're done here."
She seemed determined not to talk, but there were things Luke needed to say before they reached the terminal.
"I turned up some information while you were gone, like the reason they sold the communal."
She looked at him disdainfully.
"That's no mystery, to buy passage."
"Akana, they bought a starship."
Luke waggled the traveler's aid card. Can't judge things by their size. In addition to the maps, the food guides, and the ads, this has a wireless link to the Terre Commerce Bureau and an information hotline. Your friends may be long gone, but there's still a corporation registered here called Kelplath, and it owns a Cocos starship named Star Morning.
How many passengers could it carry?
Cocos? Maybe 60, depending on the cargo allocation.
O'Connor nodded. That would be enough.
Luke raised an eyebrow. You don't seem overly surprised by this. I was. I thought we were trying to track down refugees, not stockholders.
Just because we choose to live simply doesn't mean we're without resources. The Falanasi are as old as the Jedi, and we've hidden and husbanded our resources well. Then why were you left on Karatos?
I can see that they might not want to risk bringing their ship there to pick you up, but why couldn't passage be bought for you?
You forget that Karatos fell under Imperial control soon after I was sent there. There were head taxes that had to be paid at the port by anyone leaving. High taxes to discourage people from fleeing the planet.
Then why couldn't the tax have been sent for you?
I don't know that it wasn't.
Akana's eyes misted over.
I don't know that Tosava didn't keep it for herself.
Your foster mother?
My custodian. She was never more than that. She abandoned me there to fend for myself. At 15. In a port city that made Mos Eisley look quiet and genteel.
As the rift skyway appeared ahead of them, Luke spoke firmly but gently. We'll find them. When we get back to Mudsloth, I can access the New Republic ship registry's traffic logs. We should be able to find out where Star Morning is.
That isn't necessary.
O'Connor reached out and laid her hand across his, as though she were trying to reassure him.
We need to go to Atzeri now. And I pray this ends there.
After Mugsloth lifted from Terre, Luke asked,
Akana, how much do you know about our destination? I know it's a free trader world, not much more.
I didn't even know that much. I'd like to query the Ministry of State Atlas on Coruscant and request a diplomatic backgrounder. She smiled.
Do what you think is necessary. There are risks in ignorance. Balance them against the risks of showing our hand. If you think the weight falls in favor of making the query, then you'll wait until we've jumped out from Terre to do so. I won't question your decision.
Still, Luke waited until she was asleep to open the Hypercon link, though his reasons weren't entirely clear to him. True, he didn't want her to think he was checking up on her, but he was also aware that he didn't want to think he was checking up on her. He had to be able to trust her.
Ship registry.
Luke gave his authorization codes.
Authorization verified. Go ahead.
I need a report pulled on a private vessel.
Yes, sir. Quick or comprehensive?
The difference is...
The comprehensive includes everything in all the linked databases. Taxes, transfers, ports of call, whatever we have.
Comprehensive. The ship is the Star Morning Terre Registry, owned by...
I have it on my display, sir. Would you like it forwarded to your current Hypercom identifier when it's ready or held here for your next call?
Forward it.
Very well, sir. Is there anything else?
Luke looked over his shoulder and extended his senses to confirm that Akana was asleep. Then he made an impulsive decision. Yes, I'd like a comprehensive on a skiff of Erpine Adventurer, registration number NR8109399, owner and home port unknown.
I have it, sir. Would you like this report forwarded with the other?
No. Hold this one for me. When Akana emerged from her nap, she joined Luke at the console just as a sweet-toned signal sounded, startling her.
What's that?
Luke leaned forward. Nothing to worry about. Incoming Hypercom file transmission. A report on the Star Morning. I requested it from Coruscant while you were napping.
Her eyes flashed angrily. I asked you to wait until we jumped.
You also asked me to use my judgment. We can't do a quick jump and go as we're sitting out there somewhere waiting for a report to come in. And I thought we might get information we'd want in hand before we commit to Atzeri. It was a thick file, almost overwhelming with detail. Star Morning, a.k.a. Mandarin, a.k.a. Pilgrim, a.k.a. Congere, had had a long history before passing into the hands of the Falanasi, and a busy history since. The ship was still the property of the Kelplath Corporation of Terre, and had been so continuously for the last 15 years. The port call list for that period ran to more than 200 entries, with no single port appearing more than three times, and most entries unique. The list was spotty, obviously incomplete. There were many stretches of a month or longer with no port calls listed. A disclaimer at the top of the list read, "The absence of data should not, in and of itself, be considered indicative of prescribed travel or illegal activities." That didn't stop Luke from wondering. The longest gap started just 3 months after the name Mandarin had been burned off the hull. The gap began weeks before the Battle of Endor and continued through the worst of the fighting in the last year of the war against the Empire. One port conspicuous by its absence was at Zeri. As best Luke could determine with the adventurer's Navicom, the closest the ship had come to their next destination was en route to Fuis. But without enough unaccounted time for the ship to have made a 150 light-year side trip. But it was another discovery that Luke sifted from the report that seemed the most urgent. That was the one that prompted him to leave his couch and go back to the service access compartment, where Akana was putting on a good show of being otherwise occupied in what he thought of as her stretching exercises, and she called active meditation. She was sitting with eyes closed and without evident stress, with her ankles crossed behind her neck. A light touch of her fingertips on the deck pad maintained her upright balance. Luke waited until she acknowledged him and sat back in a more conventional position. "Found something."
Her gaze was steady. "What did you find?"
For most of the last few months, Star Morning's been way over in Farana, on the far side of the corporate sector. But she put in at Volvarch not 12 hours ago.
"Why do you think that that's important?"
"Well, Varge is just 34 light-years away. We could be there in less than half the time it would take us to get to Atzeri."
"The ship is not important. It's a tool, property. We were told to go to Atzeri."
Luke's tone betrayed his impatience. "Anything or anyone waiting for us on Atzeri has been waiting 15 years and can wait a few more days, but this lead is only 12 hours old. If we jump right now, we should be able to reach Volvarch before Star Morning lifts again."
She shook her head. "We won't find the circle there."
"The same pilot's been listed for the ship since Kel Plas took it over. She has to be one of you, or at least in the know. Akana, we could spend months following the circle's movements over 15 years, but Star Morning could send us, maybe even take us, right to where the Falanasi are today. I thought that was what you wanted."
"I'll follow the way left for me. It's what I know. It's what I was promised. The way home will be marked."
Luke turned his face away, one hand clenched at his side, then retreated to the forward compartment. When he had shed the anger, he returned. She had already resumed her meditation. "Akana, will you at least talk to them before we jump out of here? I have Star Morning's hypercom receiver address. I can set up a secure link for you. You can have all the privacy you want to exchange whatever recognition signs you need to with the crew. Maybe they can save us at least one wasted trip." Akana did not bother to look up.
"No, they can't."
"Why not?"
"Even if the crew of the ship is of the circle, they will never reveal themselves to a stranger such a distance away. As I will not reveal myself to anyone I cannot feel in the current. The outward signs and spoken words are only ritual. The recognition lies in sensing another adept beside you. I'm sorry."
Her refusal left Luke speechless with frustration, and she saw it in his eyes.
"You should understand, Luke. It's the same with you and those like you. The only recognition that matters is what you feel here." She tapped her heart. "That is the truth which can never deceive."
The dispute hung in the air between them as unspoken suspicion and resentment. Akana did not try to forbid Luke to contact Star Morning on his own, but she hovered close enough to the flight station to make it impossible for him to do so without her knowledge. For his part, Luke had already concluded that hailing the ship without her cooperation could only be counterproductive, and since he had reluctantly resigned himself to taking Mudslot to Atzeri, he resented her scrutiny. Their vigilance also prevented Luke from collecting the report on the Mudslot's history. The jump to Atzeri was a long one, and the travelers did not have much to say to each other at first. Finally, though, they both became lonely enough to welcome company and to linger together in idle talk. In the course of one of these conversations, Luke broached a serious subject. "Akana, if telling me what the scribing says violates your oath, why do you do it?
Because I consider you one of us.
You are untrained.
But you are Falanasi.
Why? Because my mother was? Is?
That, and because of the potential within you, as evidenced by your skill with the Force.
And the rest? We've had many hours together. Why haven't you started to teach me?
But I have.
I've asked you to think about what you know and believe. To go beyond that, the novice must ask for the door to be opened. But you aren't ready to think of yourself as a student again. You run too well to go back to crawling.
Luke shook his head.
No. To be a Jedi is to be a seeker. A Jedi is always learning. It's only on the dark side that one becomes obsessed with knowing and impressed with doing.
Akana replied slowly. There's a touch of the dark side in the way you cling to the privilege of killing and resist the teaching I've offered you.
Luke considered her words. You may be right. I found the Force at a time when what I needed was power. I was thinking of war against the Empire, not peace with the universe. Perhaps something of that lingers in how I see myself. I'll think on it.
Good. Your words give me hope. And hope is the beginning of everything worthwhile. I know you will be welcomed by the Circle when the time comes.
He nodded, lips pressed together, but his face must have said something more to her.
Are you having doubts about me, Luke?
There are things I don't understand, things I wonder about.
Why don't you ever ask me about these things? I'm not afraid of your questions. Are you afraid of my answers?
Luke paused for a moment. All right. Why didn't you go to Lukazek when you'd saved the price of passage? That had to be far less than the price you paid for the ship. It seems you could have gone there years ago. She smiled wistfully.
I almost did, 6 years ago. I could have gotten myself to Yautja. The temptation was almost beyond resisting.
And?
If I had gone, I would have been trapped there. I would have been on Lukazek, yes, but I would have been poor again. On Karatos, at least, there were busy ports, and I knew how to earn enough to keep myself going. I needed to buy myself freedom from ever living like that again. Do you understand now?
Luke nodded. All except for this. When you finally got this ship, why did you come for me first?
Because when I dreamed of returning to the village of Yautja, you were always there, which puzzled me until I realized what it meant. That I was supposed to take you with me. That I was to bring you to the Circle. That you belong there.
Atzeri's docking bay A-13 reminded Luke of a smaller version of the Mos Eisley facility where he first encountered the Millennium Falcon. The amenities were as old-fashioned. Hand umbilicals, a machine shop without a single tool and die droid, mechanical locks, and no storm cover. Akana announced that she was going out on her search alone. Luke frowned. Well, that doesn't feel right to me. Why can't we go together like we did in Lukazek and Ter?
Because I knew that the Circle had left Lukazek and Norica had left Ter, but I do not know that they have left Atzeri.
I don't like the idea of us being separated.
I'll be fine, Luke. Promise that you won't come looking for me until, let's say, until I've been gone 3 days with no word.